on a revolution.
What's going on, everybody?
You're in the right place.
Yes, this is the Rational Revolution. I am so glad that you're here. Every week here on Civic Media Radio Network, you've got me, Mark Becker, and you've got a returning guest who pivoted better than LeBron James did to come and hang out with us today. I asked him late yesterday, hey, do you know anyone? Would you be able to, because man, we gotta sort out what's going in Iran. And there's nobody better to do it than your friend and mine, Jeff Cabaservis from the Niskanen Center. What's up, buddy? Welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you again.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're here. Your travels have looked amazing, by the way. Dude's been everywhere in the world, and but Iran, what is happening there?
That's a darn good question. Right. I mean, you know, on the one hand, we are talking in a moment when things are unsettled. There's been this 2-week truce declared. It's not quite clear if all sides are adhering to the truce as yet. There's been a 10-point plan put forward by Iran, a 15-point plan put forward by us. It's unclear if serious negotiation is going on regarding these points or what will result at the end of it all. And we're also just not being told a lot about what goes on, and there isn't good reporting on the scene for perhaps obvious reasons. Nonetheless, it's looking a lot like the whole conflict has been a case of operational excellence on the part of our military and strategic incoherence on the part of the administration. And I suspect the peace will pretty closely resemble the war in that regard.
Like, how did we get to this point?
Well, you know, you could go all the way back to the 1953 CIA coup that overthrew the Iranian leader Mossadegh. But I think, you know, more generally, we got here because Donald Trump got reelected to a second term. And he said that he was not going to be constrained by the old Republican establishment. And indeed, he has only had around him yes men and sycophants. Yeah. And I suspect, you know, without any actual demonstrated documentary evidence of this, that when it was time to think about what the United States should do vis-a-vis Iran, that his enablers, like Pete Hegseth, said to him things like, Mr. President, you've shown that you don't need to listen to experts, these military people who war-gamed out the whole Straits of Hormuz situation 10,000 times. You don't need to listen to the statesmen who talk about prudence. You've just shown that you can just do things. If you want to go in and take Iran, then you can take it. And the hell with expert advice. And that's largely why we're here.
And, you know, like, I look at it. Yes, I mean, the military is brilliant and overwhelming and, you know, with incredible precision. So, like, that's awesome. But seeing the rollout, and this looks like a ready, shoot, aim type thing. It doesn't look like there's a lot of thought into what happened.
Well, I think, you know, again, there were assumptions that proved to be incorrect that were baked into this whole adventure. The assumption number one was that the regime would collapse. Yeah. Well, that didn't happen. Or that the Iranian people would rise up against what they correctly regard as an evil and oppressive regime. That also didn't happen. I think the assumption was that if you decapitated Iran's top leadership, then what remained would be incoherent. Maybe they too would run for the exits. Maybe they would be more moderate than their predecessors. That hasn't happened. Trump assumed that Iran would not strike out at the neighboring Gulf countries. That hasn't happened. And I think Hegseth and Trump.
All right. We lost you. We're back. You were talking about how we thought that Iran was going to leave the Straits of Hormuz open. They would be open, and then we had a glitch, and we are back. So continue that thought. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry. I think it's probably on my end. You know, I think the idea of putting military troops in the numbers needed to take over the country was never on the table. Right. And so Trump gambled, and he lost, basically. And now Iran is, you know, in some ways degraded militarily. Some of their has been taken out. But nonetheless, you know, they have now actually in some ways more leverage than before, given that they have decided that they are not going to allow the Strait of Hormuz to be international waters. They're going to control it. They're going to charge people to go through it, and they're going to not allow unfriendly powers to go through it. In some ways, they actually emerge from this in a stronger position than they did before the war.
Right. And so, if I mean, if you'd like, because we have time, and there's a history lesson from someone, you know, like yourself that knows the history, do you mind, like, how you know, an abridged version of when all of this started? I know there's the, you know, the you know, 57, you know, like, all there's so much, but leading us to where we are today.
The really potted history is that Iran has always been a distinct, proud, distinguished civilization. Iran are Persians. They are not Arabs. The Shia religion is not quite the same thing as the Sunni version of Islam that's practiced in most of the surrounding countries. There's been a distinctive element to that. The United States has meddled in Iran, as we did in 1953, when it seemed like they were moving in the direction of socialism and anti-colonialism, too much for the liking of some of the people around Dwight Eisenhower. And we also overly invested in propping up the Shah of Iran, despite what was evidently an unpopular and repressive regime. Of course, there was the whole history of our hostage crisis in Iran and the Ayatollah Khomeini and the bad relations that we got off from the start. No U.S. administration since then has really found the right footing vis-a-vis Iran. We have alternately threatened and appeased them and never found the right balance. Iran, for its part, has maintained a pretty consistent view of death to America and death to Israel. They have never softened in their view of the United States, and there has never really been what would properly be regarded as a moderate administration or regime in power there. And it's a tragedy because, again, the Iranian people are among one of the proudest and most talented cultures and civilizations on Earth. They deserve better.
Yeah, right. It's just I mean, to all of that, you know, we're talking with Jeff Kapasovers from the Niskanen Center. The Niskanen Center is a think tank in Washington, D.C. that advocates for market-oriented principles with environmentalism, immigration reform, civil liberties. And they're just brilliant when it comes to history, just like our guy here. So we're talking about, you know, the history about it. You said that Iran is in arguably a stronger position than they were when this whole thing started. Talk about that.
So Iran has largely unfriendly relations with its neighbors, but it's also one of the major powers in that area. It is also utterly ruthless. It fought a long war with Iraq under Saddam Hussein, in which they proved completely willing to put child soldiers forward to clear landmines and the like.
My God.
They are situated in a way that gives them a controlling position over the Strait of Hormuz, which is one of the choke points of the world's global economy. Not much of the oil that goes to the United States goes through the Gulf of the Strait of Hormuz, but a lot of what goes to Asia and Europe does go through that critical choke point. And so does a lot of the world's fertilizer. So the United States, without consulting any of its allies before it decided to undertake this adventure in Iran, has caused enormous economic difficulties for them, but also put in question its own legitimacy as the guarantor of the post-World War II global trading order. Because now it's been shown that a country like Iran can, if it so chooses, disregard the principle that the Strait of Hormuz is international waters. It can effectively blockade that narrow passageway, and it can possibly charge tolls for powers to go through this, using this as a trade conduit. And that could mean that it actually could gain hundreds of billions of dollars over the next several years to build up this military that we have allegedly obliterated.
What was the United States trying to accomplish with this?
I mean, every administration really since Carter's has wished to see the end of the radical Shia regime in Iran. This is arguably one of the world's worst and most evil regimes, the world would be better off without it. And it has been the leading exporter of terrorism and has brought misery to many parts of the world. However, again, hundreds, if not thousands, of military war games have gone into this and have concluded that it is too difficult militarily to take the Strait of Hormuz, particularly in an era of you know, one-way suicide drone warfare. The military has been very resistant to the idea that it would actually put the number of boots on the ground needed to maintain control of either Karg Island, which is the central area of oil production for Iran, or the Strait of Hormuz. We were talking about 500,000 men who would be sitting ducks. It would be a turkey shoot, frankly, because we are not able to defend against this kind of drone warfare. Ukraine is actually much more advanced than we are in being able to counter that kind of new battlefield technology. So since an occupation
that's
wasn't
crazy,
really
by the
a possibility,
way.
It is kind of crazy. I mean, also crazy when you think about it, is that we have probably exhausted several years worth of our critical battlefield weaponry in terms of missiles and Tomahawks and the rest of this, which also at the same time makes us less credible when it comes to standing up to whatever China might want to do with regard to Taiwan. So we're seeing a real situation where the United States is actually being exposed because of its bad governance and Donald Trump's chaotic penchant for decision-making, also his habit of treating allies as enemies and enemies as friends. So it's really not a good moment in our history, frankly.
No, and you know, you hear it's interesting, too, because you hear Defense Secretary Hegseth talk about how, oh, we have, you know, so many more missiles and we're good, we can fight this forever. And it's very clearly we can't.
You know, the optimistic way to look at this is that in what follows the Trump administration, the United States is going to think seriously about how to rebuild its defense industrial capabilities. Yeah. And it will also take more seriously the loss of trust that our allies have had in us. It'll try to turn that around. The problem is that there's an old diplomatic saying, which is that trust is earned in drops and lost in buckets. And we've lost a lot over the last, you know, several months of this Trump administration, beginning with his threat to take over Canada and make it our 51st state, his threat to invade a NATO ally in Denmark and take Greenland from them. This is not the kind of behavior that the United States has ever engaged in since the end of World War II, when we assumed, in effect, leadership of the global order. We are now the leading disruptor of that order rather than its maintainer and protector.
Yeah, and I do really want to get into that in the third segment here, because I want to – what we have disrupted is over 80 years of, you know – allies and friendships and trade norms, and it just the damage that's been done over just the last couple of months has been staggering. We got Jeff Cabaservice here, VP from the Niskanen Center in Washington, D.C. We're going to keep talking about this right after this on the Rational Revolution right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stick around. All right.